Good evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. I'm Rachel Spears, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, strange noises in Kresge, chivalry in 2025, and a record-breaking week for NU sports. Those stories and more coming up from Northwestern University. This is WNUR News at 6. Who would have thought a building could have so much in common with the human body? The noises you hear in Kresge Hall tell a story about the building's history and how we perceive sound. Cara Totley and Mariah Petway have more.
Whether it's your heartbeat or you swallowing or something like that, your stomach rumbling. I feel like those kinds of bodily sounds are similar to some kind of the bodily sounds of the Kresge building in some ways.
Welcome to Kresge Sentinel Hall, home to Northwestern University's programs in Comparative Literature Studies, Art Theory and Practice, Art History, and Foreign Languages, and also the office of Robert Ryder, a Northwestern professor who wrote his dissertation on the acoustical unconscious.
I got it also from Walter Benjamin because Benjamin himself wrote a text on film, which is a very famous paper that students will read if you're in any kind of film theory course. The techniques like slow motion allows us to see things in a kind of unnatural, but a new world, really, of vision. For him, that sort of opened up the optical, what he called the optical unconscious. And so similarly, I'm just sort of riding on his coattails in a way, but converting it to the soundscape.
And if you listen closely, Kresge has its own acoustical unconscious. The opening and closing of its doors may have become background noise, but these doors actually tell a story about the building's history.
There's so many different doors. There's wood doors, there's glass doors, there's steel doors, lots of different doors and how they sound. Back then, not just with Kresge being old, but all doors were a lot heavier. And they're like storm doors. And so they would just kerchunk a lot more.
Originally constructed in 1954, Kresge went through a major renovation in 2014 that lasted 2 years to meet new green building practices.
With every new building and renovation, there's always going to be a recreated soundscape.
Professor Ryder has known Kresge for over 20 years and noticed in this recreated Kresge space, it's more mechanically sounding.
So that's what's also interesting with these new buildings. They have a lot of more beeps and boops. So there's the elevator that, you know, if you hit the button, there's this clinging sound. And then when you get to the floor that you're at, there's another sound as the doors open, which are themselves these kind of swooshing things.
Even the sounds of the doors have changed.
It's in the office here. But if you get closed on the inside of the office, you have to press a button to open the door to get out. But when you hit that button to unlock the door so you can get out, there's this little clinging sound. It almost sounds like a tinkling of a bell. It's really weird.
Professor Ryder then guided me to that office door.
But this is the door. And I think maybe it does the clang when it so yeah, there's a kind of cling there. So now it's locked, but then when I push this, you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can open it.
Though no matter the top tier architecture, it can never fully silence the sounds behind the walls.
So yeah, there's still within the very, I think, high-end filter system that is Kresge, there's still a lot of mechanisms behind the walls that sort of creak or tap or sometimes just whir for some unknown reason, and then it just stops. It's like, what? Okay.
These mechanical sounds aren't lost on students either. School of Communication freshman Zachary Cook often hears tapping on the pipes.
Sometimes when I'm walking down the main hallway of the second floor or the main floor, I just hear like a little ting 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 like or something.
But for Cook, these sounds have become so normal, he doesn't worry about them anymore.
I look up, but I tend to mind my business, you know, and keep it pushing because I don't want to mess with anything.
Ryder explains that just as we start to notice sounds we hadn't registered before, We often tune out sounds we hear frequently.
Like the fans that we're listening to right now, which you sort of unconsciously just take out of your mind because it's like smells. Like you walk into a room and you suddenly get used to a smell and then you can't smell it anymore.
But there are also sounds in Kresge that don't quite fit into the background.
Well, you definitely hear a lot of singing because people are rehearsing. A lot of musicals, a cappella groups, we all rehearse in these classrooms. So if you're here after 6 o'clock, that's what you're hearing.
School of Communication graduate student Oluwase Unayeni says that because of the singing, Kresge is not the best place to study after 6 p.m.
I would say it depends on what you're here for. If you're here to like lock in and be like super serious, then it might not be the optimal place.
Kresge creaks, taps, and sings its own kind of heartbeat. Ryder's research encourages us to listen. Sometimes the quietest places are the loudest.
For WNUR News, I'm Cara Totley.
And I'm Mariah Petway.
If you've ever wanted a combination of full-contact sports with Lord of the Rings, role-play, and historical martial arts, look no further than Norris South Lawn. Reporter Mika Ellison has the story on Northwestern's Bellegarth Medieval Combat Society.
All right, weapons up. Lay on.
That was the sound of Bellegarth Medieval Combat Society. At this moment, they're doing a practice exercise with three club members against three others.
Yeah, we're both dead.
Every time one of them dies or loses two limbs, they switch to the other side.
Are you dead?
Yeah, I'm dead.
But let's back up for a second. They're not actually dying or losing limbs. And that thwacking sound you're hearing is the sound of foam weapons, called boffers. Here's club member and graduate student Sophia Boxenbaum explaining the rules.
So the basic rules are very straightforward in that you have a sword, you hit someone with a sword, and then depending on where you are hit, certain things happen, and that is kind of most of the rules. If you are hit in an arm, you lose your arm. If you're hit in the leg, you lose your leg. And then if you're hit in the torso, you die. If you lose two limbs, you also die.
Northwestern staff member Tony Smith is the club's advisor.
I've been fighting for over 10 years. I guess my claim to fame is this past fall, I was actually the head referee. I was in charge of running the big fights at a 1,000-plus event this last year.
Like many current club members, he first encountered Bellegarth at university.
I started in 2015 at my freshman orientation in college, at Columbia College.
Bellegarth started at Northwestern this year, due in part to Smith's efforts.
I got us a slot at Norris at night to just let people try it in general and then collected names of interested students and then coerced them into starting an org and doing all the work themselves.
The club, which started officially this winter quarter, used to practice on Deering Meadow, a central location on campus. But they've since moved. According to club president, sophomore Henry Fleck.
Deering is also just so big that, especially in a sword fight, you find out you can just run away. It's a different option, yeah.
Bellegarth may be new to Northwestern, but it comes from a much bigger world of combat-based, role-play-ish sports.
Does the sport exist outside of colleges as well? It's an organization that for adults in Chicago that encompasses clubs. By the rule of the LLC of the sport, can take up a 20-mile radius. So there's a club that controls, like, all of Chicagoland.
Its original inspiration is Lord of the Rings-style fighting, albeit with sports rules and foam and duct tape weapons. The original Bellegarth club is called Numenor, and Bellegarth itself is supposedly an elvish word. But, Smith pointed out, people come to Bellegarth for a huge variety of reasons.
Different people take it for different reasons. So, like, I take it pretty seriously. I fight in tournaments. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't role play at all. But when you go to the large events that exist out there, there are many events out there with like 1,000-plus attendees where people camp out for a week.
Whoa.
There are people that just like dress up like a goblin and pretend like they're a goblin the whole week. And then there's just me who is like jotting in my journal different like skilled sword fighters that I want to just like meet.
Smith mentioned those huge gatherings of people and found a video online. They look like a massive gathering in a field of fantasy time travelers. It's like a Renaissance fair exploded and then armed itself.
Well, the most popular style that's getting these days is you have the main field fighting, which mm-hmm. you can have like literally 1,000 people going at it at the same time on two teams. And there's like different scenarios and stuff, and it's just crazy. And then there's the tournaments, which are like officially managed. There's different categories. So you have 1v1, you have 3v3s, 5v5s with the different weapon types, because we have more than just swords. And then what's being fondly referred to as night fighting, because it only happens at night.
Bellegarth isn't just a sword thing. As you can probably tell, weapons are color-coded, Blue is a typical single-handed sword, and red is anything that takes two hands to hold, including weapons like pole arms, spears, claymores, and larger swords. You can fight with shields as well. There are also more idiosyncratic weapons, like arrows with blunted tips and...
And there are ranged things as well, bows, yeah, rocks.
Rocks.
Not real rocks.
Rocks are basically any round, soft object, from squishmallows to beanbag chairs. Smith emphasized that although Belagarth can have an overwhelming amount of rules and structure, it was created for people to have fun.
At the end of the day, I do just refer to it as wacky bats, though.
Wacky bats? Okay.
Yeah, because like, that's all it needs to be at the end of the day. A lot of people can take it too seriously.
But you're just kind of having fun.
It's supposed to be recreational.
Yeah.
That variety in approach is reflected in some of the club's members.
Jake Houston, I'm a freshman. And how I got into this, I went to the Norris at Night thing, and they had this thing where it was like a group of like three people versus three people, and like my group stayed in for like five rounds. So I was like, okay, maybe I'm good at this. Uh-huh. I joined. Turns out I'm not good at this, but I want to get good at this. So, you know.
Okay.
I also like Star Wars, so that was a big draw.
Senior Jesse Shefflin was walking with Baxenbaum on Deering Meadow when they both saw Belagarth. After one practice, she was hooked.
I thought it was super fun to sword fight. I like that it's a full contact sport, which is a fun fact, I guess. But it's definitely fun, like, when you're on the grass, you can shield bash people and, like, grapple, and we don't really do a lot of that in here.
But not very good at it.
I thought it was super fun, and I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan. I've read, like, The Silmarillion.
Oh, wow.
So it's relatable because they use a lot of swords there, where it might not be historically accurate, so it's fun. Like, for a while, I memorized the Aragorn... today is not that day speech, and so that's kind of what I feel like in here.
Baxenbaum likened the club style of sword fighting to a video game.
It's most like playing Super Smash Bros. Or something, mm-hmm. or fighting games, where there's like a level of technical skill, and like timing and ranging are all relevant, and there's also quite a bit of mind games at play, and that part is super fun.
Belagarth has its roots in Lord of the Rings, but it can also function as an affordable alternative to those who are interested in historical European martial arts. Or HEMA.
The problem with HEMA is that it's very, very expensive because you need steel swords, usually armor, and it's just a very prohibitive cost barrier. So Belagarth was created a number of years ago, I'm forgetting the specific number, U of I, actually, because there were some students who wanted to do HEMA, but they decided to come up with a cheaper, safer alternative. So that's Belagarth.
In Chicagoland, places like Forteza Fitness offer classes in HEMA. There's also a whole host of other sword fighty sports. Jugger, which is kind of like capture the flag with swords, and Dagger Here, a role-playing game with full-contact sword fighting, are a couple examples. Belagarth is part of a large family of what Smith would call wacky bat games, an amalgamation of people who come from historical martial arts, Lord of the Rings, and even Star Wars. It's admittedly a little nerdy, but most of all, it's fun.
You see people doing Belagarth out in Deering or on Norris Lawn, it's going to turn your head maybe, but it's sort of a little off-putting, which I get, you know, so it's a weird thing to be doing. Although I do think that's the fun part of it.
Fleck told me that his favorite part of Belagarth was that it can really become whatever you want it to be.
It does make it a little confusing to explain in a context like this, but that's also kind of the beauty of it, because I think even within our own small club here, we've got some members who are more interested in sort of the Lord of the Rings and the lore of all of it, and some members who are more interested in the history and sort of connecting it to HEMA if they can, and then other people who just, you know, want to run around and fight. We'll accept anyone.
So next time you see people hitting each other with foam swords on Norris South Lawn, consider joining in on the fun. For WNUR News, I'm Mika Ellison.
Is chivalry dead? From knighthood to now, join Juliet Allen on a journey to answer one of society's most pressing questions.
Men used to go to war for us, and now we can't even get a man to let us sit down on the train. That was the caption of a viral TikTok posted last month. That video alone received 1.3 million likes. But it was only one part of a larger social media movement poking fun at modern men for lacking traditional manners or respect towards women. In the post comments, a common phrase was repeated: chivalry is dead. I hear those three words come up often, usually sarcastically, when I hold the door open for my roommate or carry my girlfriend's grocery bag. But what is it about chivalry that has millions of people mourning it on TikTok? And is it truly 6 feet under, like everyone says? When you're eulogizing something, it's important to include its history. I talked to American medievalist and professor Dr. Barbara Newman to ask about where the term originated. According to Newman, chivalry was the code of conduct in warfare for medieval knights.
The reason it got extended to relationships is that in courtly romances, knights are usually presented as the lovers of ladies. So a chivalrous knight is not only somebody who's good on the battlefield, but also someone who has good manners in court.
Although Newman said the original ideals of chivalry died off alongside the knights who championed it, she said it lives on in popular culture.
That kind of chivalry is probably dead, and yet it's still popular in films. In terms of literary fantasy, I think it's just too good to lose. I think we're always going to have it with us.
Newman also said that modern notions of chivalry and its feminist criticisms are a far departure from shining armor and knightly honor.
If you look at chivalric literature from the standpoint of modern feminism, of course you're going to see that it's something different. And you're going to say, well, the woman is simply the prize that the hero gets for being the best fighter. But it's not really fair to impose modern standards on the past in that way.
Views on gender roles seem to have changed as much as chivalry has since the Middle Ages. After more than 10 years of progress, I wanted to know how modern feminism grapples with the idea of chivalry. Professor Rebecca Ewart, who studies masculinity in sociology, says chivalry isn't dead. Sometimes it's just a way of flirting and showing respect in courtship. However, she said it can often have different implications in modern society, even when it's as simple as holding open the door.
The thing with chivalry is it sets up a system in which women are framed as weaker and men can be the saviors. And so they're holding the door under the assumption that a woman's too weak to get the door.
Even under the guise of good manners, Ewart said chivalry isn't always about being gentlemanly. Rather, it is another way of perpetuating gender inequality. She also said that calling these displays of dominance chivalry could make it harder for women to protest them.
The power of words is so interesting. Perhaps it's harder to criticize a behavior that someone's saying is chivalry because that connotes this respect or this deference kind of gentleness thing we've been talking about. And so to say to somebody, I don't want you to hold the door for me, it feels disrespectful to that person. And so calling it chivalry versus calling it benevolent sexism.
Although relationship coach Shauna Muller agrees that chivalry can be rooted in male dominance, she said that it's changing by the day.
I think the old idea of chivalry is dead.
Muller, who has been a relationship coach for 6 years, said that she has noticed the men in her life start to lean into a softer masculine presence. But it's a change that must be fully embraced for it to work. This idea was shaped in part by an experience with her husband in 2020.
During the pandemic, I was up in a hospital room with my son. My water broke at 20 weeks, and my husband came almost every day outside my window.
Their story went viral.
The comments from men in the sections where he was out there with a sign devoted to me in the most chivalrous way, a lot of the men were saying, oh, he's P-whipped, or who the heck does he think he is? I think the power imbalances that come from the old idea of chivalry, I think the performative aspect is dead, dying, flailing, trying to survive.
Muller said that the more men who publicly adopt this new form of chivalry, the more it will start to spread.
We're like starting to root down into the idea that chivalry can be an act of love, remembering, devotion.
So, is chivalry dead? For a term with so many different histories, definitions, and perspectives, I'm not sure it's possible to pin one definition down long enough to call the coroner. Whether you're stomping on its grave or being visited by the ghosts of knights past, recognizing the historical and social impacts of chivalry can help us analyze the way we give and receive acts of kindness and respect. Or at least help you understand the TikTok comments. From Evanston, Illinois, I'm Juliet Allen, WNUR News.
From record-breaking performances to season-defining moments, it's been a historic week for Northwestern Athletics. Ansley Simpson has your NU Sports Recap.
Hi, I'm Ansley Simpson. Here's your NU Sports Report for this week. First up, the Northwestern softball team season came to an end last week as they lost 3-8 to the University of Kentucky and 0-1 to Clemson University. The Cats' efforts were not in vain, though. Kansas Robinson got the Cats on the board first with a clutch two-out RBI triple, driving in Grace Nito in the Kentucky game. Robinson capped off the season with a career-high 41 runs batted in, a standout year for the veteran slugger. Up next, the women's lacrosse team is headed to the Final Four. The Cats faced UPenn at home last Thursday in the NCAA quarterfinal. This is the Cats' sixth straight appearance in the quarterfinal. History was made on the field during the matchup. Madison Taylor shattered the NCAA single-season goal record. The standout attacker netted 6 goals, pushing her season total to an incredible 105. That breaks the previous mark of 103 set by Abby Horms of High Point University back in 2022. The Cats will face the Boston College Eagles on Friday. Finally, in the baseball series opener, the Cats were able to knock down number 14 UCLA with a final score of 9-4. However, by the end of the series, UCLA was able to reclaim their rank with an 11-1 victory on Saturday. In the Saturday game, Northwestern shortstop Ryan Kudrak launched a solo shot to left center, giving the Cats the lead and making history in the process. It was his 18th home run of the season, the most in Northwestern single-season history and the top mark in Big Ten play this year. The game marked the close of the Cats' regular season. The season closed with the Cats' highest winning percentage. That wraps up your NU Sports Report for this week. For more information about upcoming games, as well as how you can watch the Wildcats live, visit www.nusports.com. I'm Ansley Simpson, WNUR News.
Life is rich with symbols that carry meaning, but it is often easy to overlook simpler tasks and items, when oftentimes those are the things that can hold the most honesty and authenticity. Mangjin Marklin brings us a poem that highlights the ways our everyday routines and objects can reveal deeper truths about our wants and desires.
Hi, have you taken a deep breath today? Welcome to Wellversed, WNUR News' poetry segment, where you'll hear timely poem readings to help you relax, reflect, and reconnect. As life speeds past us in our frantic search for meaning, purpose, and love, it takes courage to stop and appreciate the drama of the mundane. Our lives are rich with meaning and symbolism, and through the eyes of a poet, simple objects can reveal themselves to be much more than they appear. Today, I will be sharing a poem that I feel encapsulates this idea of finding deeper meaning in everyday objects, revealing the state of the people who own that object and what that might mean for humanity. Here is Monologue for an Onion by Suji Kwak Kim. I don't mean to make you cry. I mean nothing, but this has not kept you from peeling away my body, layer by layer, the tears clouding your eyes as the table fills with husks, cut flesh, all the debris of pursuit. Poor deluded human, you seek my heart. Hunt all you want. Beneath each skin of mine lies another skin. I am pure onion of outside and in, surface and secret core. Look at you, chopping and weeping. Idiot. Is this the way you go through life, your mind a stopless knife, driven by your fantasy of truth, of lasting union, slashing away skin after skin from things, ruin and tears only your signs of progress? Enough is enough. You must not grieve that the world is glimpsed through veils. How else can it be seen? How will you rip away the veil of the eye, the veil that you are, you who want to grasp the heart of things, hungry to know where meaning lies? Taste what you hold in your hands, onion juice, yellow peels, my stinging shreds. You are the one in pieces. Whatever you meant to love, in meaning to, you changed yourself. You are not who you are, your soul cut moment to moment by a blade of fresh desire, the ground sown with abandoned skins. And at your innermost circle, what? A core that is not one. Poor fool, you are divided at the heart, lost in its maze of chambers, blood, and love, a heart that will one day beat you to death. Thank you for listening to Wellverse. I hope you enjoyed listening to this poem as much as I enjoyed reading it. The drama and strength of feeling that this poem provokes is an unexpected delight, and I hope that it has inspired you to pause and consider what mundane routines and objects in your life reveal about your innermost desires. For WNUR News, I'm Mengjian Markland.
Now for a brief look at the forecast. The next 3 days will be chilly but a little sunnier. Tomorrow's high will be 54 degrees with a low in the upper 40s. Friday will be similar temperature-wise with partly cloudy skies, while Saturday will break into the 60s with a low 45, and again, partly cloudy skies. Taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe, Northwestern's Pritzker School of Law will have a new dean. The current dean, Harya Sofke, will step down this summer to lead new initiatives at Northwestern. The next dean has yet to be announced. In Chicago, the village of Dalton will take over Pope Leo XIV's childhood home. The village is coming up with plans to open the home to the public so that it can be a historic site. In Washington, the president of South Africa visited the White House today. This is after President Donald Trump welcomed white African refugees to the United States while barring refugees from other countries from entering. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Micah Sandy, and our reporters are Mariah Petway, Cara Totley, Mika Ellison, Juliet Allen, Ansley Simpson, and Megan Marklin. I'm Rachel Spears. Catch our next newscast, our special broadcast, this Friday, May 23rd. Now back to scheduled programming.